Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in, friends, to the NOLA Drink Show this week. Oh, yeah, I do appreciate it, as always. Got a really good show coming up for you here today. We're going to be talking about sort of the landscape, if you will, of American whiskey and bourbon. I think we do actually sample one Australian whiskey during the course of the interview, but predominantly we're talking about American whiskey, some market trends, some things maybe you do know, some things maybe you don't know. We taste some things. It's really a fun show. We're joined by Tracy Napolitano, who is the executive director of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival. And coming up on March 11th through the 14th, that festival is the fourth annual iteration thereof. As a matter of fact, I mistakenly said third annual last week, and you'd think I'd know because I'm involved with the festival. My mistake. It is the fourth annual New Orleans Bourbon Festival, and I would encourage you to go check them out. Tickets go pretty quick, and they're on sale. I know some of the VIP stuff is either already sold out or close to selling out, but there's different levels of tickets for the different things that you want to do. The grand tasting, there's seminars, there's dinners. We'll talk about it on the show coming up, and I've talked about it before. But if you are interested, go check out New Orleans Bourbon Festival.com. Again, New Orleans Bourbon Festival.com. So there you go. And that's Tracy's gig, and he's on the show with us. As I mentioned, we're also joined by Bobby Childs, and Bobby is an avid blogger, writes a really terrific and very well established blog called Adventures in Whiskey. And to go check him out, it's Adventures in Whiskey, whiskey with an E, WHISKEY.com, adventuresinwhiskey.com. And he reviews and discusses different whiskeys, talks also about the industry, all kinds of things like that. Bobby is also a local television producer, but a big, big whiskey dude. And his blog is excellent, so do go check it out. So he joins us as well. And then we're over at the very fine Lower Garden District restaurant, Grigri. And it's a neat place. I hadn't had a chance to get in there and into the space and check it out until we actually taped the show. And in the last segment, which is actually the podcast only segment, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks, their executive chef and owner, Eric Cook, joins us. And the food, it looks just tremendous there. They got a good beverage program as well. It's refined Southern cooking. He does a lot of really, really interesting stuff. And so Eric joins us in the podcast only portion of the show. So friends, if you are here listening on the radio, I do encourage you to get the podcast, because we do Another Shot with NOLA Drinks, stuff you can only hear on the podcast. And we're on your favorite podcast network. You can find it just about anywhere. As a matter of fact, recently the show was picked up by both Deezer and Pandora. So if you get your shows there, like to get your podcast there, that's where you will find us as well. In addition to Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google, iTunes, or Apple Podcasts now, I guess is what they're calling it. I'm probably forgetting a couple others. Just go to whatever your favorite podcast network is and search for NOLA Drinks, and you will find us there. Quick note, friends, we're working on a new feature here on the show. It doesn't quite have a name yet, but I'm very excited about it. It's going to be coming out really soon. We're going to be regularly joined by our good friend, Phil Minasalli. Phil is a spirits broker here in New Orleans and has all kinds of really interesting, a lot of craft, a lot of boutique-y stuff across the spirits world. Really, really interesting stuff. So Phil's going to join us on a regular basis. And what we're going to do is we're going to sample and talk about different spirits. And then we're going to bring in typically a local bartender who's going to make two or three drinks for us out of these various spirits that we're showcasing that day. We're going to share the recipes with you. There's going to be cocktail video demos, all kinds of really cool stuff tied into that. And we're going to be kicking that off soon. We're working on it this week, kind of getting it ramped up. So be on the lookout for that when we're joined by our good friend Phil Minasalli talking spirits. Friends, what we're going to do, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we're going to bounce right over to Grigri for our featured interview talking about American whiskey and the New Orleans Bourbon Festival. Come on back. C'est le bon temps brûlé. Hey, Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. From the city that shares a deep connection to bourbon and knows how to throw a party comes the fourth annual New Orleans Bourbon Festival from March 11th through the 14th. discover over 150 bourbons and American whiskeys, as well as great food, all at the Grand Tasting. Check out more than 30 seminars led by industry luminaries, special distiller dinners, and much, much more. The event is brought to you by Beam Suntory, Four Roses, Brown Foreman, Uncle Nearest, and the Hilton Riverside. More info and tickets at nobourbonfest.com. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Deese here at WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yeah, friends, thanks for listening into the show here this week. And yeah, we're talking about bourbon and we're talking about American whiskey, all kind of teeing up Bourbon Festival, New Orleans Bourbon Festival, coming up here. Third annual, March 11th through the 14th, and we'll get into that. Fourth annual. And the man with the plan on that is Tracy Napolitano, Executive Director of New Orleans Bourbon Festival. Tracy, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I should know that it's fourth annual. We'll probably get into why I should know that in a little bit.
Yeah, too, we can do that later, but yeah.
Okay, right on. And Bobby Childs, who's also the owner of Adventures in Whiskey. Bobby, first time on the show, man. How you doing?
First time listener and first time caller and
first time guest.
Guest.
Drinker.
No, definitely not.
You'll drinker on the show.
Yes. True. Very true.
Yeah,
we're happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're not tearing the veneer off here as a first time drinker and throwing you under the bus right away, man. That would scare me.
It would be funny though.
That would be kind of fun. Yeah, we'll do that sometime. We're going to get ourselves in trouble. I'm going to move on right away here. what we're talking about here today, as you know, on the show, aside from the fourth annual Bourbon Festival coming up, is we're kind of talking about the broader landscape in whiskey, American whiskey, and bourbon, and hit on some topics here and some stuff like that. But let's do this, Tracy. Let's start right here. Let's tell people very briefly, and we'll circle back on this, about New Orleans Bourbon Festival, fourth annual, March 11th through the 14th.
Well, we're now a 4-day event starting on March 11th through the 14th. We started where we were just a couple days. Now we expanded in our fourth year. We were 4 days last year. We're 4 days this year, and we've got some special things happening this year with the seminar series. I'm going to announce it here first. No one has heard this out of my mouth yet, other than a few people. Freddie Johnson from Buffalo Trace will be speaking on Friday and Saturday at the festival, and he will be in the Sazerac booth on Friday night.
Ah, very exciting.
So that's something we've been trying to get Freddie for a while, and that's a big get for us. And I think the fans and
he's
and
got
the
a
guests
lot of fans
will be you're really clamoring to get seats in his seminars. It's going to be a fun time.
It's a really cool thing about the event that I like a lot is that you do have the grand tastings on the Friday and Saturday night,
correct?
Which you're talking about. Great restaurants, pairing food with whiskeys and other vendors that are there, which is really cool. But then I love the educational component about it. So during the days, there are seminars where a lot of these heavy hitters in the whiskey and bourbon world are going to be there giving presentations, teaching classes, that kind of thing.
Right. We're at the Hilton Riverside again in the Riverview Tower. Once again, we've got the whole tower to ourselves. And we've got Fred Noe's back, Eddie Russell's back, Trey Zoller from Jefferson's is back. Our keynote speaker is Brent Elliott from Four Roses this year.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And we're going to have, like I said, Freddie Johnson will be there.
You got Peggy Noe.
Peggy Noe Stevens has come back doing the Bourbon Women's panel.
Yep.
She's assembled a real nice group to talk about women in bourbon, and we're going to do her food pairing again, where she pairs food with bourbon and entertaining. The Bourbon Women will have their own bourbon lair again in one of the suites, and then we have Samara Rivers coming with the Black Bourbon Society.
Smart, great.
They're going to have an activation at the hotel with a suite for their group and everything.
Nice.
So we're really changing and adding more every year to try to make this the best festival we can in the bourbon industry. And like Barbara and I, when we founded this thing 4 years ago, it was like, can we create something we want to go to? And we still think that's exactly what we're doing. We're creating something we want to go to.
Cool. So, awesome. And yeah.
But I think if you want to come, get your ticket soon. We're Ultimate VIP, as of this morning, there are only 3 tickets left.
Oh, wow. Okay, so different levels of
different
tickets
levels,
with
Ultimate,
different experiences.
Ultimate VIP, which makes you one of the 50 judges for the Bourbon Awards. We do a Consumer Bourbon Awards. And then the VIP, then you have the Connoisseur, where you get to go to one night of the Grand Tasting, but all the seminars. And then you've got your regular tasting ticket, where you can pick Saturday or Friday to go to the tasting, and that gets you into the tasting. It gets you the whiskey and the food.
Got it.
And the only thing you'd have to purchase is if you want to buy some artwork, or we have a company that comes out of Massachusetts, Hedgehog Designs, and they build barrel furniture.
Oh, cool.
And they they sell there. They've been coming for 4 years. And they called me yesterday, and they built a new piece of furniture called the Whiskey Couch out of whiskey barrels.
Okay.
And they have donated that to our charity.
Oh, nice.
And it will be raffled off.
Tell people about that, too, because it's important. Kids Can Nola.
Kids Can Nola is our charity. My wife and I put it together 3 years ago, and our goal is to raise money to help educate the children of New Orleans, help with medical issues, just a variety of things that kids need in New Orleans that they may not get elsewhere.
Got it. And it's a great organization. And in full disclosure, I'm going to throw this your way, Bobby, here real quick, because you're a board member on Kids Can Nola on the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, as am I. So Tracy works for us now, man.
He does. That's Tracy, my whiskey glass is getting low. Chop, 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 chop. Garcon.
Garcon. So, Bobby, tell us a little bit about Adventures in Whiskey. What do you do there?
So Adventures in Whiskey, almost 6 years ago now, I decided to start a whiskey blog. Because I got tired of telling people about whiskey and how excited I was about whiskey and trying new things and seeing eyes roll in the back of their heads. All right, I know there's a community online. Let me start. There are a few blogs out there. Let me start one. And it's been great. It's been a hell of a ride. My initial goal was just to try as many new whiskeys as I could. And eventually it led to trips. Like just recently I ended up on a trip to Scotland. Which was just out of this world. I'm still pinching myself.
Nice. So broader, we're talking about the whole world of whiskey.
Yeah,
here
I started bourbon and rye and American whiskey and sort of stretched out. I'm trying to get Tracy to open his palate and enjoy world whiskey. But whiskey as a whole, as a general category, I'm all in.
Very cool. And, you know, in all fairness, too, because the festival has kind of opened up. It started out as bourbon festival, but it's gone to the broader category of American whiskey, right?
Right. It started out as bourbon. We had some rye in the first year. And then, you know, I'm a bourbon nerd, as everyone knows. And I was stuck on this is going to be bourbon. It's about bourbon. But as we got to meet the different vendors, the distilleries, and the people that work in the industry, it was made clear that we needed to broaden our horizons. So we did rye, we added Tennessee whiskey, and then now we have pretty much any type of American made whiskey. So you'll have American single malts there. You'll have, you know, just like I said, Tennessee whiskey. We have whiskey and from Virginia that comes every year. So we've got a lot of new single malts from Oregon will be here this year.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So we're getting more and more into that whole category of American whiskey.
And this will be sort of the first question in the broader topic, guys, that we're talking about, because I think we've talked about this on the show a lot, and probably most listeners know, bourbon is not solely connected to Kentucky. You can make bourbon, if it's made to the correct mash bill, anywhere in the U.S.
Correct.
So I think, and people know that, but I wanted to frame it that way. Do we see, and I've asked this question before of different people, I seem to see, and it's all anecdotal, more people are using, outside of Kentucky, are actually using the term bourbon on their bottles, whereas they were making something to a bourbon mash bill, but still calling it whiskey in outside the Kentucky area in America. Do we see people kind of outside Kentucky embracing the term bourbon more?
We do. I think you're seeing more. I mean, one of the bottles on the table here is Ragged Branch, which is outside of Charlottesville, Virginia.
Okay.
And this is one of the bottles we picked for the Bourbon Fest. So this is a single barrel pick from Ragged Branch.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a weeded bourbon. But we see it more and more. I mean, you've got some of your Tennessee whiskey, you know, distillers making whiskey for others, and they're putting bourbon on the label because it's still a bourbon mash bill, even though it's Tennessee whiskey. You know, in Kentucky, they don't use Lincoln County process like they do in Tennessee.
Right.
But there are people sourcing whiskey from some distilleries in Tennessee that are calling it bourbon.
Bourbon. Hey, Bobby, would you tell people, just give us a quick the Lincoln County process, and what is a bourbon mash bill, just so people know what we're talking about.
So in essence, bourbon, 51% corn, and you can use whatever other flavoring ryes. Most common are malted barley and rye, although sometimes wheat's used, or someone like Buffalo Trace will use a variety of different things in some of their experiments. It's going to be aged in a new oak container, it's got to be, it comes off the still at what, 125?
25?
Mm-hmm. Or goes into the barrel at
125. It can't come off the still at one more higher than 160.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So in essence, that's the gist of it. No, if it's straight, there's nothing added. No flavoring, no coloring.
It's water, corn, it's water, barley, and rye,
whatever your grains are.
Whatever your secondary grain is,
corn or more, right?
40% minimum ABV bottling, and you have bourbon. Give us a couple of years, and you have some wonderful American spirit.
There you go. And that can be made anywhere in the U.S., friends, if anywhere it follows in the US. Spec that Bobby laid down. Now, what's the Lincoln County process?
That's a filtering process where they burn maple wood to charcoal, mm-hmm. and they basically have a tank full of this charcoal, and as the distillate comes off, it drips through the tank into the tank with the charcoal, and as it comes out the bottom, it's filtered, and that's the Lincoln County process, trying to give you a mellowing of the whiskey.
So, and does it, to use that term, does it have to be done in Lincoln County, and is that a Tennessee? I mean, people probably do it outside, but to call it the Lincoln County process, is that only in Lincoln County? Do we know that in Tennessee?
I believe it's Tennessee.
They probably
know that. I don't know that it's specific to Lincoln County.
I understand it's Tennessee.
I think it's Tennessee.
It's Tennessee in general.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Cool. So what are we drinking here, guys? Because we're going to talk about some different trends in the market and some things that we're seeing. Right now, we have what are we drinking here, Tracy?
The Elijah Craig Straight Rye. Bobby brought this because I guess he's doing a review of this particular one.
Okay. Tell us about this one, Bobby. We'll talk about rye as a broader category, too.
So, yeah. So, you know, bourbon's the big thing, especially in the last 15, 20 years. It just exploded. And meanwhile, rye seemed to be the little engine that could, in a sense. At some point, a lot of bartenders decided they liked rye a lot. They loved the spiciness, the boldness. It worked better in cocktails. So, to that point, a lot of distilleries weren't making a lot of rye. They may make rye once or twice a year, and everything else is bourbon. Now, since its popularity as a spirit, as a category, production is just ramping up so much. You know, once or twice a year is turned to once or twice a month or more.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's a great category if you're a bourbon only drinker, go into rye because chances are there's rye in your bourbon mash bill already.
Right.
There's that spiciness in there, and rye can be a fantastic. It can bring a lot of fruit flavors. It can bring a lot of spice, baking spice, or rye spice. Think rye bread. You have a slice of rye bread, mm-hmm. and get that little spiciness, and that's what rye whiskey brings. To me, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a we're here in New Orleans for, you know, obviously for folks that know us and know this. Rye's always had a role here in New Orleans because it forms the basis of the Sazerac after it was swapped in for cognac and so on and so forth. So it does make for great cocktails because that spicy note comes through. You know, one of my favorite things to do is actually have an old fashioned where the base is split between bourbon and rye. Which I think is a great way to do an old fashioned, personally. But so tell us about the Elijah. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to jump in into Elijah Craig. So Elijah Craig, their big thing is a small batch bourbon, aged somewhere between 8 and 12 years, and then they've got a single barrel expression, mm-hmm. same bourbon, just single barrel. They have a 12-year-old barrel proof bourbon, and they just announced just a few months ago a straight rye whiskey is a brand extension.
Okay.
Which I think surprised a lot of people.
It did, and the states that they're launching in first upset a few people because the states that wanted it weren't getting it. So
yeah, it's something.
So it's launching in certain states first, and then it'll trickle down eventually to everyone.
Sure, you got to ramp up production, right? I mean, you got to pick your spots. That makes sense. So and if you're listening here locally in Louisiana, not quite available here yet, right?
Not yet.
Is that correct?
No. Okay, and I'm not sure. I don't have a date for
when. I haven't seen a release date for Louisiana yet on this.
Okay. So it's coming. We're putting that on everybody's radar right now. Let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here on the show because we're in a good spot to do that. And then we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more perhaps about rye and the category. And talk about some other things here on the bourbon and American whiskey landscape here on the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, we're going to take a little break. Come on back.
Yeah. every afternoon when I wake up, I say a little prayer and drink up, and thank the Lord for driving me home once more. There's an open Bible on the table.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome back to the program. Brian Diaz here. Thanks for listening in. And I want to give a shout out to our friends here at Gree-Gree, Superfine Restaurant on Magazine in the Lower Garden District, 1800 Magazine to be specific. Come check them out. Really good food, good drink program, and they are kind enough to host us here today. Is a chef going to join us? Do we know? Maybe
he said he was going to try. He's going to make his way up here. I know he's here. I just haven't seen him yet, but hopefully he'll make his way up.
Got it. Maybe we'll stick him in the podcast. The only segment. Friends, if you're listening here on the radio, I'll use this as an opportunity. Go check out the podcast. You can get it at noeldrinks.com. It's on Pandora, Spotify, Stitcher, all those. And we do an extended podcast-only conversation called Another Shot with Noel Drinks. And Bobby and Tracy are going to stick around for that, too. So, yeah, if you're listening on the radio, the podcast is really the way to go, friends. We're talking about the landscape here of bourbon and American whiskey. And so we were talking about rye, you guys, a little bit. What do we pour here, and what story are we telling? We continue with the rye conversation a little bit, and we poured a little bullet. Yeah?
This is the bullet single barrel that we picked as one of. We did 22 barrel picks for the Bourbon Fest this year that you can purchase around the city.
Uh-huh.
This is one of two single barrel bullets we got. We got barrel two and barrel three that came to Louisiana. And this one I named after my wife. This is called Barber's Dream.
Okay.
That we're drinking. But, you know, this is a high rye bourbon. So 51% corn, but you now have a higher rye content in this. So it's still bourbon, but you've got a good bit of rye. You're going to get a lot of spice on this one. And I believe it's coming in around 104 proof. Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. So, yeah definitely.
So, yeah, this is a single barrel pick.
Got it.
Yeah.
And so just to clarify, too, and Bobby on this, so like with the Elijah Craig straight rye, 100% rye? Is that what that means?
When you say straight rye, it's got to be at least 50. It sort of follows the same rules as bourbon, except for the mash bill, it's got to be at least 51%. And I believe the Elijah Craig's 51% rye, 14% malted barley, and 30%
corn at that point. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. So it's kind of the flip side then.
Right.
So you're allowed to play with that other 49%.
Yeah, and that's one of those barely legal, I put that in quotation, rye.
Not the Larry Flint Club, but the rye.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so tell us what a barrel pick is, Tracy, briefly. We've talked about it before, and probably most people know, but just so they know.
Yeah, so we have a team of people that are associated with the festival, just some other bourbon friends that take these trips with us, and we'll go around the country. Kentucky, we did a single barrel of Whistle Pig. We went up to the farm in Vermont with a group. Bobby was supposed to come, but he had a little accident and he couldn't make the trip. We like to pick these and have them in the stores for the fans of the Bourbon Fest. Our people, you're starting to see where people are searching for these, as they call it, the unicorn or the white whale bourbons.
Mm-hmm.
Barrel picks are becoming very popular for people that can't find or have the means to get these very expensive ones.
Limited release.
Right.
Got to bid on them or do a lottery thing or something
like
that. Yeah.
So now what people are searching for are these barrel picks because, they're readily available. We got 15, 12 packs of this out of one barrel. So and we have two different barrels. So one's called the Bomber, one's called Barber's Dream. So you can get the one you like best or you can get both of them. So we've done quite a few. This is the most we've ever done.
Okay.
Since we started doing barrel picks, we started with one 3 years ago. I think we did 9 last year. Now we're over 20. Our whistle pig sold out so fast we had to actually pick a second barrel, which will come in right before the fest.
Cool.
It's just we weren't going to pick two, but then it went so fast and the demand was high, so we were able to get a second barrel from Whistle Pig.
And cool. In essence, a single barrel bourbon or a single barrel whiskey is technically, I guess, the rarest whiskey you can find. One barrel, once it's gone, it's gone.
Right.
Small batch things like, say, George Stagg, for example. We don't know how many bottles, but we know it's a bunch of barrels. It's hard to get. It's impossible to get. But a single barrel of bourbon is 200 bottles,
230, sometimes. Depending on the age of the barrel and where it's hidden, where it's stored in the rickhouse.
Once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
So is it? And Bobby, I'll continue with you on this. What it's interesting, right, with a barrel pick, because it gives you an opportunity to see maybe a brand do something a little different than what you're used to tasting on the shelf or off the shelf.
Sure,
right?
Yeah. So the 2018, Tracy and I went up to Jack Daniel's to pick a single barrel. And the way the process works, sometimes they'll pre-select some barrels, and they'll let you taste through them, and you pick your favorite. In this case, we tried the first one, and everyone was like, it's okay. It tastes like Jack Daniel's. We tried the second one. It's good, but it's not. We tried the third one, and Tracy and I just like looked at each other.
It's like our minds exploded that on gotcha that one. Moment. It was so freaking good.
It's got the Jack Daniel's DNA, but it tastes nothing like any other Jack Daniel's I've ever tried.
And that was a special pick, too, because not only did we spend the whole day there, we did it with Jeff Arnett, the master distiller, and he pre-picked the three barrels from his master distiller's collection. So we didn't get just three barrels out of the warehouse to taste. These were predetermined by the master distiller, and he let us pick from his barrels.
Okay.
So we actually, it was one of the best picks we've done, and it was.
I generally don't buy multiple bottles of, because as a blogger, I've got a lot of bottles at the house, mm-hmm. so I don't have room for them. Mm-hmm. I generally don't buy a lot of bottles, but when I tasted that one, every week I was texting Tracy, when is it coming to the market? When is it coming to the market? Oh, it's here. Give me a case. It was that good. Huh?
Yeah, awesome. And if people are looking for it when they're in town or living here now, there is still a little bit of it floating around.
Okay.
You should be able to find it at Martin's.
Martin Wine Cellar.
They generally have it. I don't know who else has any. Maybe Brady's would have some left.
Okay, but, Brady's Wine Warehouse, yeah.
But yeah, there are still a few cases at RNDC, so it can be ordered. So if you go to your favorite store and you're looking
for
it,
I'm running low. You can probably
get them to order it for you.
People know RNDC is the Republic National Distribution Corporation, so people know who we're talking about here. Throwing out a lot. Like he's like, Brady's Wine Warehouse. I just want to... Yeah. Our guys, when people do barrel picks in the whiskey world, American whiskey world and the bourbon world, I know in the Scotch world that lots of times the Scotch distilleries will put their name on it, and sometimes, like with single cask selection, they will not want their name on it. Are people more forthcoming in the American whiskey world? They want their name on it. Is there ever kind of secretive stuff where it's like a barrel pick where they won't?
There's sometimes when, you know, non-disclosure agreements are in place where you know, we don't want you to say where it's from, but for the most part.
And there are some distilleries that are making their own whiskey now that have sourced barrels in their warehouse that you can pick from. But, you know, that is coming from one of the other bigger distilleries, and that is not disclosed.
So,
that does happen, sometimes. But for the most part, all the ones we pick, they want their names on the barrels, and I want Bourbon Fest name on the barrel,
the bottles. Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here, and then we're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit more. I want to talk a little bit about we got a handful of big houses out there that dominate sort of the distilling landscape in the American whiskey world, but we have an uptick, a constant uptick of small guys. We'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to tell people how to connect with New Orleans Bourbon Festival again, and also how to connect with Bobby on Adventures in Whiskey. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back. A whole bucket. Laissez le bon temps brûler. Hey, Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. From the city that shares a deep connection to bourbon and knows how to throw a party, comes the 4th Annual New Orleans Bourbon Festival from March 11th through the 14th. Discover over 150 bourbons and American whiskeys, as well as great food, all at the Grand Tasting. Check out more than 30 seminars led by industry luminaries, special distiller dinners, and much, much more. The event is brought to you by Beam Suntory, Four Roses, Brown Foreman, Uncle Nearest, and the Hilton Riverside. More info and tickets at nobourbonfest.com. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here at the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Friends, thanks for listening into the show. Yeah, hey, we're having a good time here. We are at Grigri, fine restaurant, 1800 Magazine Street in the Lower Garden District, and we're talking about bourbon and American whiskey with Bobby Childs and Tracy Napolitano. And guys, so We're tasting. We're really interesting stuff. And I want let's talk about what we are tasting. The Ragged Branch. It's a barrel pick. Right?
It's a barrel pick for the New Orleans Bourbon Fest. We did two barrels. We did a double oaked, wheated with these guys, and then we did the rye, the straight rye.
Okay.
And this is actually the first bottle of straight rye they've released.
Okay.
To the public, and they are making. Dave Pickerel was involved. He created the recipe for this. As most of you that are following us follow whiskey, Dave passed away last year, mm-hmm. and he's just an icon in the industry with Maker's Mark, Whistle Pig, and he helped these guys develop their mash bills for their bourbon and rye.
And well, where is Ragged Branch of people?
Right outside of Charlottesville, Virginia.
Right.
So we went up, and Adam and I went up and picked these bottles, and this rye is just amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it really is good.
What do you think about it, Bobby?
I just had a pour during the commercial break, and it's, oh my God, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Given it's a 4-year-old whiskey, rye, everyone's got a different taste profile. Mm-hmm. For rye whiskey, I like mine a little bit older.
Okay.
Just because I don't like that sort of like green rye raw
gotcha. Yep.
Grain note.
You get the spice note kind of integrates further, right?
And sure.
Okay.
This is a good integration. It's a good balance. Mm-hmm. It's not too green. It's not too oaky. It's a nice balance. That's a great starting point for a rye whiskey, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like if you're not into rye, maybe a great place to start with rye.
And given that it's barrel proof, I if you're just getting into it, I'd suggest a couple ice cubes or a
couple
of water.
Cubes and some water and good old fashioned, right?
Old fashioned. Great old fashioned.
Yeah. not a weak old fashioned, but a potent old fashioned.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, we're going to talk about something I want to get here in this segment that and veterans of the whiskey world here know that there are seven big houses that kind of dominate production. But when we talk about the smaller production, we see more guys that are actually starting to do small production stuff. And so we're seeing a constant sort of uptick of small houses that are actually distilling. Can we kind of lay that landscape out a little bit? Big guys make a lot of stuff for a lot of people with a lot of labels, but we actually see small guys with their own production facility on site.
All right. What you've seen over the past few years is these distilleries popping up, and they were sourcing their whiskey, whether it's from MGP or one of the bigger houses were making it. Well, while they needed to get product on the market. So, but while this is going on, they are making their own product and, you know, been warehousing it. So now that product's starting to age. It's getting to be beyond that 2-year period. So we're seeing 4- and 6-year-old whiskey. You're seeing that with Peerless. I mean, they've got some 6-year-old whiskey about to come out. You're seeing here Ragged Branch is at 4 years. So you're starting to see that. And so you're going to whiskey actually being made at these small distilleries. And not sourced anymore. Mm-hmm. But I mean, just here in Louisiana, you've got up in Acadiana, you got T Moon as a new distillery up there. I think that's the name of the product. I don't think that's the distillery name. And then you just had a new distillery open 2 weeks ago. They had their grand opening, I think, Aaron Gonzalez.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and then you got 7-3 here in New Orleans. They're getting very close to their bourbon. So,
are you talking about Sugarfields maybe?
Sugarfields, that's them. Yeah, and Gonzalez.
Yeah.
But then you've, you know, like I said, 7-3 is getting very close to releasing their first bourbon. So.
So are we seeing, Bobby, are we seeing guys that are making other spirits then have distillation on site? And so part of their repertoire, maybe among vodka, among rum, is also whiskey?
Sure, yeah. And I think, you know, whiskey is not a, you know, distill today, bottle tomorrow sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It takes time, unfortunately, or fortunately for us, depending on your point of view. Which is a great thing, but in the meantime, you have to find a way if you want to be known to be a whiskey producer. You have to source whiskey, and when you start sourcing from say an MGP or something like that,
tell people who MGP is.
MGP Midwest Grain Spirits or Midwest Grain Products. Mm-hmm. Sorry, out of Indiana. A lot of whiskey. They make a lot. They're one of the largest whiskey producers in the country. They make a lot of whiskey, a lot of different styles.
A lot of names that you know that you don't know. That
yeah.
They
look
make.
At. Just turn your bottle around. Yeah. If it says distilled in Indiana, it, most likely it's
MGP.
It's MGP.
Which yeah. was, if I'm not mistaken, originally part of Seagram's back in the day.
Oh, way back in the day.
Yeah. It was part of Seagram's. Yeah.
Got it.
So I think the challenge too is, so you go develop a whiskey with them. You sell it under your own name while you're distilling and aging your own product. I think the turning point or is once your product is of age, making sure it's the same profile.
When you move it to your house.
You don't want to make fans of a whiskey and then you release yours and it's something completely different.
Yeah.
I mean, quality is important at this point.
Right, and you'll see some of them start Solera aging where they're taking a little bit of their old, adding it to the new, and they're trying to get that flavor profile consistent.
And keep it consistent. Yeah. Now, that's maybe where the subtle change here is a little bit, right, where people were making labels, but the seven big houses were making it for them, and that was just going to be the model, right?
Yeah.
And then now what we're seeing is that people maybe start with one of the seven big houses with the idea, Bobby, like you're talking about, where they're going to migrate to their own actual production.
Yeah.
Is that a fair way to characterize it?
That's
exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay. And that, because I think we've seen this nice sort of steady growth of small distillers that are making on their in their own spaces.
Yeah.
And that continues to kind of grow nicely. Do we think that trend's going to continue?
I do.
I think so long as they can, you know, stay in the black and afford to do it. Because distilling's an expensive industry.
Yep.
You've got to be able to, as whiskey, you've got to be able to put it away and let it rest.
Yeah.
You can't just put it right in the bottle because it's just moonshine.
And in quality is important. A couple of years ago, I got invited to Frey Ranch and right outside of Reno. And at the time, he had a few different whiskeys he was making. None of them released at the time. And they let me try this 2-year-old bourbon. I'm like, this is fantastic. It's 2 years old. Why aren't you guys putting this out? It's some of the best 2-year-old bourbon I've ever tasted. No, we want to wait till 4 years. We know we think it's going to be a much higher quality at 4 years, much more flavorful. We're not releasing it an age over or a day under 4 years. And I think just a couple of months ago, they just started releasing it in the state, and it's. I'm trying to get my hands on one. So
okay,
I just saw that.
Colby, if you're listening,
we'll tag him in the Instagram post, man.
But it was so delicious, and I think that's the one of the issues with a lot of craft distilleries, in my opinion, is quality. A lot of them rush to get a whiskey product out, and it's just not good. And they're going to have to charge more to stay, to stay open.
Yeah.
Why would I pay $75 for a bottle of bad to mediocre whiskey when I can go buy a bottle of Elijah Craig, for example, is on a table for $30.
Yeah, right. And get,
and it's tried and true.
Absolutely. And it's the same model that plays out in the wine world, right? Where, if you're going to go the classic route of opening a winery and have your own estate vineyard, you're 4 years until you have a production viability. So what's filled in that gap is custom crush and doing things where you're buying bulk wine or do whatever to make yourself profitable or at least get cash flow going on day one.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing because I wanted people to understand that we do see we are seeing an increase in craft distillers with their own production ability. And then we still have the seven big houses, and I don't think they're mutual exclusives. I mean, I think they can continue to coexist, right?
Oh, absolutely.
They are mutual exclusives.
Yeah. I mean you're seeing like Constellation buying up all kind of small craft distilleries, adding it to their, because they're building a bigger bourbon portfolio or whiskey portfolio, so they're buying up brands left and right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I'm sure that's the that's the hope for some of these small brands is I hope one of these big companies sees us, enjoys us, and buys us out.
And then buys us out, and that's the model,
was
too.
It Pernod that bought Rabbit Hole? Mm-hmm. And I think they paid something around $70 million for Rabbit Hole.
Yeah, right, okay.
Beautiful distillery, but they're new, so they're making limited whiskey, but these guys saw a potential, and they went and bought them.
Yep.
And they're going to eventually be, I'm assuming, available worldwide.
Yep.
So
okay. Yeah. Let's do this, you guys. We got about a minute left before we close out the portion of the radio show. Tracy, tell people real quick where we can connect with New Orleans Bourbon Festival.
So
and
it's
the dates and all that kind of stuff.
We're March 11th through the 14th at the Contemporary Arts Center for the Grand Tasting Seminar Series at the Hilton Riverside. Tickets available now. They're going fast, especially the VIP tickets. It's nobourbonfest.com. You can get ticket and hotel information on the website.
Cool. Awesome. Bobby, Adventures in Whiskey, buddy.
AdventuresInWhiskey.com. You can find me there. I'm always posting some stuff. You can connect with me on Instagram. I'm always on there, Adventures_in_whiskey. Twitter, I'm on there a little bit. It's Bobby_Childs because I'm just too lazy to change it.
Fair enough. Is Tracy going to keep his job, man? Do we think? We don't have a quorum here. We can't quite vote him out.
No,
right now.
Not yet. Maybe we should get some phone calls. Yeah.
Hey, friends, Bobby and Bobby and Tracy are going to stick around for another shot with Nola Drinks. We're going to take a little break here on the show. Thanks to our friends here at Gree. If you're, again, listening on the radio, 1800 Magazine Street in Lower Garden District, come check them out. I think we got Chef here who's going to join us in the podcast-only segment, so you're going to want to stick around for that. If you are listening on the radio, friends, remember to be kind to one another, use a turn signal, and until next time, cheers, y'all. All right, everybody. Yep, another shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for sticking around. I hope you are enjoying this conversation about bourbon and American whiskey with Tracy Napolitano from the New Orleans Bourbon Festival and Bobby Childs from Adventures in Whiskey. We're about to bounce right back over to Gree. And in addition to those two guys, we're going to be joined by executive chef and owner Eric Cook. Here we go. All right, everybody, have another show with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in, friends, this week. As always, yeah, we're here at Gree in the Lower Garden District, 1800, I'm trying to say, Magazine Street. Yeah, I've been drinking a little bit of whiskey here, and we're talking with Tracy Napolitano, Executive Director of New Orleans Bourbon Festival, Bobby Childs, author, Adventures in Whiskey, blogger.
I would say author.
Author, yeah. Blogger.
Tight pants.
Okay, yeah. Author,
drinker.
Author.
It's a few levels
the,
under.
The tight pants came out. You can tell we took a little break and had a little more whiskey. And we're kind of, all right, that's a story for another time. And executive chef here at Gree, Eric Cook, has joined us as well. Eric, buddy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. Glad to be here. Glad you guys are having a good time. Yeah. A lot of bottles of bourbon on the table, some whiskey. I'm okay.
It's your space, but there are worse places to parachute into as a table full of whiskey.
Absolutely, there are. Yeah, this is a good spot. I'm happy.
Yeah, cool, man. Right on. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for hosting us here today.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. Man. Anytime.
Yeah, cool. So you guys, we've been talking about the landscape here of, American whiskey and bourbon, and what we're tasting this time, you guys, which we didn't really touch on. What we're starting to see also in the industry is differing mash bills, differing aging vessels. So we're kind of seeing like the sort of the all bets are off, right, and how stuff's being made, how people are going about making it. Are we seeing that because we see distilleries in new areas? How's this landscape changing?
So, some of the big guys like Buffalo Trace. I was up there a couple years ago, and they pulled some stuff out for us, and they had they were using a bourbon that used amaranth as one of their grains, and now it's already on the market.
It's already sold. You can't even get a bottle.
They're doing so many weird, crazy things up there. They're trying. So the loss for bourbon, it's just new charred oak container, not American oak, nothing specific. So they're playing with Chinese oak. They're playing with probably Russian oak. They're playing with Canadian oak, French oak, all these different things, just to see. Hey, what happens? What does this kind of wood bring to our spirit? Mm-hmm. And it's just so much fun to be able to do that. And Fireball, okay. Fireball plays for. I can't stand Fireball, but Fireball pays for this whole thing, which is great.
Yeah, brings in money, right? Allows experimentation. And we're seeing that across different spirits categories, right, guys? I mean, we're seeing that in tequila. We're seeing that in all kinds of different things where, and the wine world sort of crossing us. We're seeing this in beer as well.
Right. Yep.
Just in general. So, like, what are we having here, man?
So, yeah, so I brought Starward Nova. It's an Australian single malt, 2 years old, aged exclusively in Australian red wine barrels. And I like different whiskeys, but at 2 years old, for me, it's usually a little bit young, a little bit too green. Not this one, and I think it's because of the climate that it matured in and the type of barrel that it's aged in. That those red wine barrels really imparted a lot of fantastic fruit flavor.
And it's rounding out the edges of it, I think, is kind of what I'm getting in the glass here. So what else are we kind of seeing on that front with people? Because, I mean, I think now that we start to see people making a lot more whiskey outside of Tennessee and Kentucky, and I'm just characterizing this, Tracy, you tell me if it's fair or not, kind of when we start to move outside those two circles, we start to see more experimentation, don't we?
Yeah, there's a lot of further finish in wine barrels, cognac barrels, stuff like that. But you've got a company like Corsair. They're doing some crazy stuff. Those guys are like mad scientists up there. They got something called the Grainiac. I think it's 9 grains.
Oh, wow.
In the bourbon. They've got their triple smoke, which, you know, Bobby knows I'm not a big smoke whiskey guy, but that one's actually really good. So they're doing all kind of, and they're doing a lot of their stuff in still 15-gallon barrels, but, you know, not even doing the big full, you know, barrels yet. So there's a lot of that experimenting going on. I mean, you talk about Buffalo Trace with the Oak Project. They've got a room they built trying to age a bourbon 50 years like you would do with a scotch.
Yeah, so in one of their rick houses, there's a massive refrigerator that holds barrels, and their goal is to try and slow age whiskey. Because, you know, like with the hot climate, whiskey ages pretty quickly in Kentucky. But if you go over to Scotland, it's a lot cooler. It's a little bit more humid.
Right.
Slower maturation. That's what they're hoping for. So we'll time will tell. We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, you may be around. I probably won't be around to taste that one.
during the break, we were talking about body shape. You'll see it in our group photo that we take after the end. But Eric, man, so you know, you're executive chef here at Grigri. Tell us about your. I mean, how are you? You're a whiskey guy, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, for me, I think I've always been a whiskey guy. You know, and I'm a simple beer man as well too. You know, and for me, the relationship between, obviously, I think, you know, when chefs come up and mature, you know, there's an unspoken law between bartenders and chefs. There is, you take care of me, I take care of you type situation. So we're lucky enough, I think, most guys, you know, to get introduced to things you normally wouldn't get introduced to as a younger chef or a sous chef or a cook because you're hooking up to bartenders with some chow, you know. So I was introduced pretty early, you know, and I just think over the last, you know, I guess it feels like, you know, 10 years maybe or so, it just really kind of, It went from, I guess, a closet kind of type situation, you know, where it was a society thing like the bourbon, and it was kind of to where people really opened their eyes to, like, wow. And now everyone's kind of into bourbon, you know. And I think it's one of the things, like, you know, we talked about, you know, craft beers, how they're kind of crossing lines, you know. And I've had the opportunity to do a bunch of dinners with, you know, a lot of folks in every aspect of the, you know, the spirit world, from, you know, wine, champagne, bourbon, you know, rum, tequila, beer. And you see, you know, the same kind of things happen. We talked about, you know, using different barrels for stuff. My friends over at NOLA were doing experimentation with their aging on beers.
NOLA Brews.
Yeah, okay. And they were doing, you know,
Kirkland, yeah.
Yeah, they were doing, you know, beer aged in tequila barrels, and they had one, I think, called Al Tequila or something. And they were doing, you know, and so they had this little secret Quonset hunt that I was allowed into. You know, they tap the nail and get the, like, what? You know, so, and as I kind of get into it, you know, and obviously my time at the Bourbon House really opened my eyes up, because I think they have one of the largest collections outside of Kentucky.
They have, I think they're over 300 now over there.
Yeah.
I know, because when I built my collection, they were my goal.
Right.
And I've tripled past them already, so yeah. It was.
There was some name dropping, right?
Yeah. That's right.
You heard that?
Triple pass.
It's where Chef and I met.
Exactly.
We met
at the Bourbon House.
That's what I was saying earlier. I sent a shot of bourbon to the kitchen because our meal was amazing.
Yeah, and that's it now, you know. And now I've actually, you know, in the beginning we opened the restaurant up, you know, obviously, you know, being, you know, my wife and I own the restaurant. you know, money's an issue. You know, so we kind of, you know, let's get open. But now I'm actually starting to, I'm building. I got a bunch of friends of mine who are like, hey, man, they come to dinner all the time. Like, what bourbons do you want to see, like, on the menu? Approachable things, affordable things for us as, you know, restaurant owners, but to have, you know, middle to high-end bourbons hanging around. So I've really started dedicating myself really to getting back into, you know, tasting and doing bourbons. Because the food we do, a lot of folks, you know, try really hard to pair with things. You know, I think, you know, what we do here is pretty neutral. We do southern refined food. We do home cooking, you know. And I think, you know, for me, drinking, you know, bourbon, mostly I'm at home, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm relaxing, just having, you know, a cup of bourbon by myself. You know, my wife or my daughter are running around. So it's relaxed. So I think the home cooking approach to, you know, southern cooking and bourbon, you know, just lends itself really well. And a lot of folks are like, well, what goes with what? I'm like, man, good bourbon goes with everything. Yeah. You know, it really doesn't matter, you know. Yeah. So I've kind of rededicated myself and my team at the restaurant to kind of let's explore bourbon a little bit, you know, and expand our portfolio maybe a little bit more. But it's fun. You know, I mean, I've got to meet so many amazing people, obviously, and do so many amazing events, you know. And it seems everyone that I've come across in the business, like, you know, distillers and the families and the big houses we talked about earlier, you know, are so hospitable, you know what I mean, and so nice and so willing to not only, you know, share, you know, their family, their heritage, their livelihood, you know, with, you know, strangers, you know. They just make you feel like you're a friend right away, but to educate as well too, you know. So I've had a lot of good moments to meet some folks who really take the time as ambassadors, I guess, you know, to their craft to educate maybe someone who doesn't so much. Because I think people, you know, like wine, you know, it can be intimidating, I guess, and, you know, people are afraid to get into bourbon, like, oh, it's, you know, it's a, you know, class above me, whatever. It's not, you know. It's just like, you know, when you get into wine, you know, you learn a few things, you learn, you know, once you learn kind of what you're looking for, I guess,
yeah,
or what to look for, you know, because a lot of people just taste blind, and, you know, you don't have the verbiage, I guess. Maybe say, well, that's this. Oh, and then once you know, you kind of hear what's going on.
Putting it in a framework, I think, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, it's really spectacular.
And actually, you raise a really good point here, and Eric, and this whiskey, I think, is a good example, and I'll throw this out to you guys. I think when we start to talk about people doing different mash bills, and in particular different aging vessels, so we can talk about this across spirit categories, talk about this across beer as well.
Yeah.
You might say that you're not a bourbon drinker, but then I can find a whiskey, or I'm not a whiskey drinker, I can find a whiskey for you, because something like this might be an entry-level kind of consideration for a wine drinker.
Yeah.
Right? And I think we're seeing that with beer, that people are starting to experiment more, so we can kind of bridge these gaps across categories. Do you guys agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I do. It's why we're adding a bourbon barrel wine bar to Bourbon Fest. We had a couple of wines last year. This year we're going to have an expanded wine bar, and we're working with a beer distributor to bring in a bourbon barrel beer bar.
That's so cool.
Because people want... While everybody wants the bourbon, they we're getting questions from our guests. Can we get something a little different for a break?
Yeah,
and, you
right.
know,
yeah,
or
yeah.
Hey, my husband's coming with me. I drink the bourbon. He drinks wine. Can we, you know? So that's kind of a trend we're seeing. So we're gonna answer that for people.
Yeah,
there's
much variety under the bourbon umbrella.
Right.
Or
yeah.
The
if it touches, if it touches bourbon, it's welcome.
There you go.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Creating that accessibility, right?
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Flavor's flavor. Right?
Exactly. When flavor's flavor.
And when that comes down to
exactly it. Right. And it's all about, you know, like you know, everything else. You know, what we do, we strive to do is we like to build flavors. You know, you start with something. You know, the process of doing, you don't just throw everything into one pot and forget about, you know, you want to sear something and get that flavor and deglaze, get that flavor, you know. And it's the same with bourbon, you know, the way, like you said, talk about the wood they use, the barrels they use, the temperature, the climate, you know, the humidity, all these things go into it, you know. It's all finding the recipe, you know, to build on those flavors, you know. And seeing the recycling of the barrels, you know, is really cool, you know, I mean, because like we said, you know, people doing beer in bourbon. And now wine. I haven't, you know, heard about the wine in bourbon barrels. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, there's,
you know,
some good wines, and they're not like crazy expensive either.
Right.
That they're just aging there, you know, for a few months, I guess, actually, in a bourbon barrel.
There's some big brands out of Napa that just started doing that. You know, so Mondavi's doing a cab.
I think they're doing a Chardonnay, I believe, as well.
I know they're doing a cab. I didn't know they were doing a Chardonnay.
Makes you wonder.
They'll be a Bourbon Fest.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Is this a trend, or is this something long-term that we're going to see?
See, that's a great question, Bobby, and I think we'll see how that kind of plays out. I think it does create, sort of to my point or the question about accessibility and trying to bridge those gaps and kind of break. I think, you know, we've been so rigid in categories for so long, right?
Right.
And then I think we start to see people making stuff in different places, people doing different things, sort of all bets are off. I mean, you know this, Eric, like doing the type of cooking that you do. It's like there's traditional stuff and then how you fuse other things into it, right?
Exactly.
And,
right, yeah.
And, yeah.
And that's the thing, you know, you get, you know, like you said, you know, kind of the barriers coming down, you know, the rigid barriers we had so long. You know, I mean, like, and there's purists out there like, oh, this, it has to be the pure, it's not, whatever. But now, you know, as people, you know, expand into greater markets, even smaller markets, you know, to tap into those potential, you know, guests or profits or sales, you know, you've got to broaden your horizons. You know, like in a restaurant, I just don't say, oh, this is Creole, oh, this is Cajun, you know. I mean, look at the food in New Orleans, you know, how much we've changed, you know, and not the last 10 years or the 20 years, but, I mean, just in general, you know, the melting pot, the culture, you know, the community who brings their own family heritage into things. You can see now we have more variety of restaurants. You know, I know we always say before, you know, the storm, we had 600 restaurants or so, and now we're up around 15, a little over 1,500.
Yeah.
You know, so the market being small, but it's still a very, you know, it's a diverse place, yeah. You know. So, and I think the same thing applies with spirits, you know, especially bourbon. You know, people tearing down those rigid barriers, going, hey, let's tap into this market, because it's bourbon drinkers everywhere. You know, it's not just in some rich house with a snifter on the side with a cigar with a bunch of lawyers. You know, now it's everybody across the board.
Yeah.
Make it approachable, make it enjoyable. You know, like you said, bridge those gaps.
Yeah, not just white dudes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You know, those guys, but not just white dudes.
When Trey Zoller at Jefferson started making those further finished whiskeys in the wine barrels, people thought he was crazy. I mean, and Jefferson's has become a pretty big brand now because of his experimenting with the different barrels and aging. And, you know, who would have thought putting the barrels on a research ship
would have
led to Jefferson's Ocean,
right?
And the weeded one tasted like freaking salted caramel. I mean, it was delicious.
Yeah.
So
I got a bottle at the house. Yeah.
Right.
Cool. Well, let's do this, you guys, because you got an event, Eric, coming up here pretty quick here at Gregory. Tell people real quick, man. I've given the address a few times. Where do we find you on the street? Where do we find you online? All that good stuff, man.
Oh man, we're in the LGD, greatest neighborhood in New Orleans, Lower Garden District.
Down in the LGD, baby.
That's it, man. 1800 Magazine. We're on the corner, man. If you don't make the turn, when it's a one-way still, you're going to smash right into us, and that's cool, too. We'll take care of you. But, yeah, great place, man. Good food. You know, 7 days a week. We're brunching Saturday and Sundays, man. And
You got social handles and website and all
that. Yeah, we got obviously Facebook. We're at Gregory Nola. Instagram, Gregory Nola as well. Website, gregorynola.com. All the usual stuff, all Gregory Nola kind of tags into it. You know, check us out, see what's going on. Lots of information on there. Lots of hot new stuff happening. Actually have a brand new menu dropping on Monday, this Monday, the 27th.
So. Okay, cool. This will be out a little after, so it's out now. Yeah. And for you non-Nola types, Gregory is spelled G-R-I-S. Just want to clarify that, because we got a lot of people listening outside the air. They're going, is that G-R-E-E?
Yeah, it's not Gris, man. It's the Gris.
It's not Gris. Yeah. So we're going to turn you out. We'll spin some Dr. John.
Absolutely.
That'll make some sense to you.
Absolutely.
Adventures in Whiskey, Bobby. Where do we find you, brother?
Find me at adventuresinwhiskey.com. Whiskey with an E. that's how it started. Adventures_in_whiskey on Instagram, and Bobby_Childs on Twitter, because I'm too lazy to change the handle.
Yeah, fair enough, man. Fair enough. Tracy, one last time, New Orleans Bourbon Festival, buddy.
It's nobourbonfest.com. You can get tickets and hotel reservations right on the website. We will be launching the app with all the schedule, with the seminars and everything, and the restaurants that are coming will be available in about a week. So check it out.
It's a great event, friends, so be sure to go check it out. Check out Gregory, 1800 Magazine Street. Check out Bobby's blog, Adventures in Whiskey. Guys, thanks so much. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Appreciate the hospitality. Right?
Anytime.
Friends, brief musical interlude. I'll be back with my parting shot. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the show, friends, this week. I do appreciate it, as always. Hope you got something from that conversation there, an enjoyable conversation with Chef and owner of Gregory, Eric Cook, Tracy Napolitano of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, and Bobby Childs of Adventures in Whiskey. And yes, do be sure to check out New Orleans Bourbon Festival, 4th annual, coming up March 11th through the 14th. Quick programming note for you next week, friends. We're not going to have a new show, but what the plan is we're going to be culling some bits and pieces from our Another Shot with Nola Drink segment. So if you're listening, if you listen to the show on the radio, typically, obviously you're hearing this on the podcast, you don't get to hear that stuff. So folks who are radio listeners will get a chance to hear some highlights from Another Shot, and maybe these are just things that you've also missed. So that will be the plan next week, and we'll be back with a new show after that. Friends, this is our parting shot. And for those of you who know, there is the so-called Royal Street Pedestrian Mall, and the idea is that a chunk of blocks, I believe it's between St. Louis and St. Anne Streets in the French Quarter, would close between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. to close to automobile traffic to allow pedestrians to leisurely stroll Royal Street and check out the shops and museums and other establishments there in that nice stretch
of the quarter. And that has been suspended. And I actually have noticed this a handful of times recently walking around. I kept thinking, geez, I thought Royal Street was supposed to be closed in this area. And my understanding came to my attention recently in a conversation with a friend of mine who is works for a nonprofit that does a cultural preservation, works with musicians a lot, things like that, that it was a public safety thing due to the collapse of the Hard Rock Hotel, keeping access to Royal Street open coming up New Orleans towards downtown for access to a fire station that's down Royal Street and other considerations. And no one's going to argue with the need for public safety in this instance, of course. But again, it's been a nice thing in the French Quarter to have. Now, one of the things, aside from the pedestrians and visitors and all of us there that enjoy taking that leisurely stroll down Royal Street, as I mentioned, it's also been a haven for street performers. So what we have is, of course, musicians, artists, other street performers, carnival-type performers, and folks that I like to call poets on the fly, you know, the folks you'll see sitting out there with an old-school typewriter, and they'll write a poem for you right there on the spot, and others. And there are a lot of bands who perform on Royal Street. Lots of times they're new, up-and-coming people. Sometimes they're also very, very well-established and famous people. The great clarinetist Dorian Ketchins comes to mind, who always performs right out there by the Rouse's supermarket. Too Biskinny is another band that comes to mind, and one could argue that they made it. They're, you know, now pretty famous and noted in tour and play in clubs and all this kind of stuff. They were frequent performers on Royal Street several years ago, and it contributed to their success. Now, there's the exposure that comes with this. There's the income that comes with this. Yes, even the practice that comes with this. And not everybody that performs out there is particularly good. I get it. I'm not a big fan of the karaoke singers, for example, in some instances when they're just doing run-of-the-mill music. This is sort of a side story because a lot of people will complain about, oh, hearing the same song over and over again, the performers aren't that good, they're in the way, so on and so forth. And this is my tangent here, but what I will always say to people, or I think about, sometimes I won't say it to people, but I do think about it, is, you know, if you move to the French Quarter, if you move to the Marigny, for example, and you've lived here for less than 40 years, I kind of don't care what you think about street performers because you knew what you were getting into, and that's probably why you moved here in the first place. Okay, side note. But there have been attempts to shut down the pedestrian mall on Royal Street in the past, as recently as 2017. A handful of the businesses there wanted to have it cease so that they could continue to get deliveries throughout the day. I do get that it's an inconvenience for delivery trucks, but we're talking about between 11 and 4. Have your act together when you order. They mostly deliver in the morning anyway. I think it's kind of a bogus sort of thing. Now, certainly there have also, as I mentioned, been complaints about noise, repetition of songs, as I already said too, lack of quality of performers. But overall, it's part of the landscape and part of the culture that we quote-unquote export and that we promote as part of our tourism economy. And we know, as we talk about all the time on this show, the tourism economy is the basis of the New Orleans economy. This relates to both the overall music, right? We sell the whole music scene in New Orleans to people as why, you know, in part as to why they want to come here, why they should come here. And the street performer aspect of this makes up a significant part of this. I've known a lot of people who got their start playing on the street and then somebody established overheard them and took them under their wing. It's part of the pipeline of how people become great New Orleans musicians in many, many, many instances. Okay, so certainly with this Hard Rock Hotel collapse, we've talked about in the news, right? In newspapers, you've all read this or seen this, most of you anyway, if you're outside the area. Of course, there's been conversations about the businesses affected in the radius where things have been closed. The Sanger Theater, for example, had to cancel or postpone numerous performances. All kinds of retail businesses have suffered from this, suffered greatly financially. Some have even gone out of business or owners have actually given up. We've also talked about traffic issues and being inconvenienced, for example, not being able to get around the immediate area. Of course, a safety thing, but it's a hassle, right? It is a hassle. We know all that. But this is just another example of quote-unquote collateral damage from this accident, and maybe one that you haven't thought about. What I mean is how this is threatening and marginalizing street performers whose bread and butter and main area for performing or often performing is on Royal Street in the pedestrian mall. And it would seem to me that a group like this, street performers, right, for lack of a better way to categorize them, are probably not likely to get any sort of financial compensation for what they've lost over the previous 3 months or the upcoming months where they will still continue to be affected. Now, as the fighting and finger pointing about who's responsible for this, who's liable for this, continues to ramp up. Oh yeah, and it's on. It will probably be years before anyone at all is compensated, if they're even compensated at all, for this. But again, street performers are probably going to come out on the short end of the stick. How are they going to go about getting compensation, right? Where's the legal help going to come from? So on and so forth. So really, friends, all I'm asking you to do is consider all the effects of what's happened with the Hard Rock Hotel collapse. Think about the cultural economy that we export. Think about street performance and what it means to New Orleans. Lots of issues connected there that we'll talk about on the show down the road. I guess all I can really tell you is when Royal Street opens back up and you see people out there, or wherever you see good street performers in New Orleans performing, give them an extra tip, especially now. They might be hurting a little more than they were before. They do make up part of our cultural tapestry, friends. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.